If it's all right with all of you, I'm going to try to continue where we had left when we were talking last night. If anyone wasn't there, it's still nectar. You'll catch up. So I had digressed to start talking about the Krishna book, but what I had really been in the middle of talking about was my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada after Karandar had left and I had been asked to assume his responsibilities in publishing. So this was my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada in that capacity. But I should say that all throughout the previous year, 1973, that was the year right after the first book distribution marathon. And the energy and the inspiration that we felt from that marathon was just a starting point. All throughout 1973, Krishna, who is residing in all of our hearts and who is the source of all knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness, intelligence, all throughout 1973, Krishna in our hearts was directing how book distribution would grow. He kept giving us newer and newer ideas, like instantaneous ideas, instantaneous strategies, ideas based on our intense desire. The more intense our desire, the greater the ideas were flowing into our minds and hearts from Krishna, from Lord Chaitanya. We can't explain it any other way. Things that we had never done before, we were suddenly fearless. We had this vision. The world is Krishna's property. Therefore, there is no limit to where we are allowed to go. And no one can stop us. We had this vision. We were seeing the world as Krishna's property. And we were so absorbed in that day and night, that vision, that we just started getting these ideas and started going everywhere. And, of course, in America, it's a little different. The places where people would congregate, shopping centers, we were sneaking into. Airports, we were going all over these airports. Concerts, big events. Remember, in America, they had these giant concerts. Like 500,000 people would go to a concert called Woodstock. And then they tried to have that in San Francisco, another half of them. So these giant concerts were taking place. And we were just going right in, wheeling boxes and boxes and boxes of books in, right past the gate attendants. And somehow, as if it was invisible, we would go in and they didn't stop us. So all through 1973, this kept happening. And I kept writing letters to Srila Prabhupada describing it. And then, maybe the beginning of June, May or June, so that was only a few months after the first marathon, all the temples were like hearing about this, and we had sent out letters describing how we convinced people to take books. We even made tapes of how we would stop people and get them to just take the books. So then we had this idea, which is not a very popular idea, but it was a great idea, to take the very best book distributors from the temple and donate them to the world. Now, normally a temple likes to hold on to their best men and modigis. They're very protective of those devotees. But back then, our idea was, if we donate our best men to other parts of the country and eventually other parts of the world, then this same ecstasy that we are feeling will be felt all over our movement, and the storehouse of love of God that we were plundering will be plundered everywhere. And it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the more you plunder and distribute that contents of that storehouse of love of God, the more it fills up, and the more you distribute it, the more you taste it yourself. So we had this very simple idea, and we just started giving away our best men. My best friend, Triparari Mara, I gave him away. One of my best book distributors, Budi Manta Prabhu, we sent him to Australia to teach them there. So while this was not very popular with most temple authorities to give away your men, in L.A. they were accepting this as, this is just part of, they thought what a world headquarters is supposed to do. Rukmini and Dwarkadish are deities. This is part of their opulence to distribute these men like that. So in this way, all over the world in 1973, this was going on. And new realizations, new places. We had this idea to hire attorneys who specialize in a certain branch of the law based on the United States Constitution. Not based on the state, but on the federal Constitution, that would enable freedom of speech and freedom of religion in any publicly owned place. So when the authorities started to try to stop us, we had our lawyers. They were empowered by Prabhupada and Krishna. Prabhupada blessed the idea. We asked Prabhupada if we could do it. He said yes. And we started fighting and we were very challenging, very aggressive, very determined that nothing was going to stop us. We were not meek. We were not mild and meek and slow-paced, mellow Brahmins. We were warriors. And we were using everything in our arsenal, whatever intelligence Krishna gave it. And then Prabhupada wrote that famous letter, how he approved sending out our best men to teach others. This is the process of Krishna consciousness, teach others. Do this so that in the future every devotee in our movement will know the art of distributing my books. This is approved by me. That was the second half of that letter. The first half of that letter, you may have heard it, where Srila Prabhupada said, after hearing one of our letters about the results of Sankirtan, he said, our temples are places not for eating and sleeping, but they are bases. You know this word base? Like an army camp, where the army camps and has all of its troops and support and munitions and supplies, everything. So Prabhupada said, so our temples are bases from which we send out our men to fight Maya. Fighting Maya means distributing thousands and millions of books to the conditioned souls. Just like during wartime, the bombs are raining from the sky like anything. So we made copies of this letter and made sure it went up in every temple of the world. So that was the mood of 1973. And it was, I thought, the highest point of my life. I was a book distributor. I was Karandar's assistant in the BBT, but he was doing a lot of the work. I knew what he had me doing copyrights. And as the book distribution grew, he had me go out and rent a big building as a warehouse and start organizing the shipping from the printers coming in and the shipping to the temples going out. So I told the temples, there are 7 days in the week. There are 3 days you can place orders, because on the other 4 days I'm going out on book distribution. But on these 3 days you can call me, give me your order, I will get it out that same day or the next day. I used to have a little contest. They would have to call by 12 noon. I would call all these truck companies and tell them, you come to this warehouse by 5 o'clock. And I had these big forklifts. I was the only one in the warehouse. And I was getting all the books ready so that when the trucks came, and the more orders they would take, the faster I was working. I found that to be almost as ecstatic as going out on Sankirtan, because the books were still flying out. So anyway, ecstasy. Books flying out. Ecstasy. Confirmed. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So Karandar leaving was a huge blow in so many ways. It's hard to describe it if you didn't know him and didn't work under him for years. But devotees thought he was self-realized. They just never heard. They had never seen a devotee of his stature have difficulty with sex desire. We have read about it, but we were all controlling it. So then our biggest leader fell victim to it. And when Prabhupada made me the manager after that for the printing, it started the end of my going out except for 1 day a week. I found because now I was working full time in this other transcendental job. So I remember the conversation I had with Sri Parari. I was crying and telling him how miserable it is to be a manager and how blessed you are. Don't ever manage. Just stay pure book distributor. I remember that fear that I was feeling so bereft that I used to go out so much more. Anyway, so here we are, 1974. I'd just been put in this position. Prabhupada had just come to L.A. and we're getting ready to reprint some books. And the press devotees and Radha Balava, who was the press manager, and Bali Mardan, who was my BBT trustee, the only one left, had given me here's what we're going to do with the reprints. So I already told you yesterday how we went through the drawings that they wanted to change in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada rejected. He didn't find one drawing to be superior to merit a change. And as we're going through the selection of new paintings they wanted to put into the Krishna book, not adding, but substituting, that concept really bothered Srila Prabhupada. He said that once something is approved by me, it is authorized by me, you cannot touch it. You cannot change it unless you get my permission. And the only way, he said, I will ever give you permission is if you, in a painting, if you do the exact same pastime better. Not that you can never take out anything that I have approved. Those leelas have to always be there. But if you think you can do one a little better, so we had already gone through, Prabhupada, they want to take this one out and put in this. They want to take this out and put this in. And he was so mad. And the paintings they wanted to put in, which we thought were wonderful, there was this really nice painting of Krishna and Balaram herding the cows. And he said, that's very general. And you're taking out a very important, specific pastime to put in something general. No. He didn't criticize the art. He just criticized the idea that you would take out a specific pastime for something general. And then when we had this painting of Krishna and Balaram and the coward boys, they were running in the fields, and Krishna had very long blackish hair. And Prabhupada really criticized that. That flowing hair, he said, he called it hippie. So this was going on. I was trying to show Prabhupada, okay, well, they want to substitute this. I thought it was better. And I think I told you yesterday, the painting of Putana that we had published, compared to the one in the Krishna book that had been done in the first month of painting for Krishna book, from a technique point of view, the new one seemed much better visually to me. And Prabhupada rejected it for so many reasons and kept the old one, which seemed almost childlike in the way it had been painted. So I'm going to explain how those paintings came about. I did not know that history. This meeting that I had with Prabhupada, I had no idea what had happened at ISKCON Press in 1969. No one did. If you weren't there, you didn't know. It had never been told, that story. So, finally, he was so angry. His melodic, beautiful lotus mouth and voice were being used to yell. He was yelling at me. That if you put something unauthorized in my book, you risk ruining the whole thing. And then he started explaining just something that he would, for the rest of my time with Prabhupada, explain to me over and over and over again, that these books are the reason I'm in this world. And it's not just for this generation of people alive in the world. These books are meant to be read now, 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now. But said, and he wasn't praising himself. He was just describing what was happening, how Krishna was dictating these books, and he was writing them to be the law books for humanity for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So when he put it in that context and then said, and if you put anything unauthorized in the book, you ruin everything. Well, the everything became something so huge. It was like the future of the world was at stake for the next 10,000 years. So, it was the scariest thing I had ever heard in my life. A nuclear war was nothing compared to what Prabhupada was describing. That this plan for the golden age of Lord Chaitanya, you Ramaswar, you could ruin it. I can't even begin to tell you. When Srila Prabhupada is yelling and saying those words, the thoughts that go into your mind, well, okay, let's see, is the only option suicide? Or is there a way I can suddenly become an atom, a molecule, and disappear? I mean, you just can't believe that you could be the cause of the end of the movement, practically. This was the heaviest, and he was yelling because this is his mission. He came to this world for this purpose. Somehow or other, I found my voice. I said, Prabhupada, there's one more painting they want to show you. Just take a minute. The deities can't bear to hear this.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So the artist had been working very hard on an updated painting of the Ras Lila. They had more descriptions now, they had more time, and the way they painted it was very different from the original, because they had descriptions of, as Krishna was dancing with each gopi, they were becoming so overwhelmed in the mellows of the Madhurya. They were so overwhelmed that their hair was loosening and different things were happening to their dress. Our artists boldly, and it turns out very foolishly, tried to capture that moment of the rasa dance, of the gopi's hair loosening. But technically, they had put a lot of effort into this painting. They took like 20 devotees into a park. The men devotees were dressed in a certain way. The women devotees were dressed in a certain way. They were posing these devotees and taking pictures so that the artists could come back and using that as the staging, design this new painting of the Ras dance. They really put, I mean, they've been working on it for a long time. So I found my voice after Prabhupada described that I could be the ruination of the whole movement for the next 10,000 years. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, there's one more painting they want me to show you. What? What is it? He was so annoyed. I said, Srila Prabhupada, they want to publish this painting of the Rasa dance as a replacement for the original painting by Devahuti. Now, we're sitting in Prabhupada's sitting room. If you've ever seen the photographs, the walls are blue, the curtains are gold. That's his sitting room. The door between Prabhupada's sitting room and bedroom, that door had been removed. So it was just a nice big doorway opening. So that way, anytime Prabhupada was sitting at his desk doing his translation, he could look into his bedroom, because this bedroom was filled up to this day with the nicest paintings from the original Krishna book. And on that wall, so this is the desk, and that's the doorway, and you look into the doorway, on that whole wall you see Devahuti's original Rasa dance that was published in the Krishna book. So Prabhupada is looking at it as I'm telling him they want to take out his favorite painting. He could hardly speak. He was so angry. And I showed him the print of what the new painting looks like. The first thing that happened after this pause, which felt like a year, his fist came up and he slammed his fist on the desk. Now, I'm sitting on the side of the desk. That was my seat. I always used to talk to Prabhupada from that side. He slams his fist right in front of my face on the desk and starts yelling. First he yells about how this dance they have painted with the loosened hair, hippie seed, hippie dance, just ripping the painting to pieces, exactly as Lord Nisringadev ripped the fabric of the whole universe with his nails. He's ripping this painting to pieces. And he's yelling, saying, "Rascals! They're all rascals! You're all rascals!" And he was yelling so loudly. His servant, Sridharma, who was sannyasi, Sridharma comes running into the room. It sounded like someone was attacking Prabhupada. He comes in the front door of Prabhupada's sitting room, and he's greeted with the pounding of the fists and yelling, and he couldn't even pay his obeisances. This was the most frightful thing he had ever seen in his life. He's standing in the doorway, holding his hand up because he can't look at it. He's got one foot. He's standing like this. My first meeting with Prabhupada as his BBT manager. And finally, after Prabhupada finished making sure that I would never forget this as long as I live, he looked at me and he pointed and, "Get out!" I've had a few other meetings like that, but this one was unique. This is the mercy of the spiritual master. Although I felt like the future of life in the universe was hanging on this issue, at the same time, I somehow felt such an ecstatic emotion that Prabhupada had treated me like this. He must have felt I could take it somehow. He didn't treat everyone in this way. This was like reserved for a few devotees. I can only speak about my experience like this. So... And of course, I had to run downstairs, call New York, get Bali Mardan and Radha Balabhar on the phone, tell them word for word what had happened. They told me, write it out. I wrote it out. I sent this long letter, blow by blow letter to the artists. They all wanted to commit suicide. It was a very devastating moment of how Prabhupada was training us to understand that these books are so authorized, they are so important, and every part of them he thinks of and has planned himself personally. So in order to understand the real significance of this, not just going forward into history, but going back into how did these books come about, I have to tell you this story of the Krishna book. I started to mention it was 1969 that Prabhupada made a decision he was going to stop dictating the third canto. By the way, In 1969, he had finished the second canto. He was halfway through with the third canto. We barely had enough money to reprint the first canto, and the only way we could afford to reprint the first canto is by ordering it from the printer that Prabhupada had used in India, where it was much less expensive, different quality, no artwork. Our movement in the 1960s had no money. There was no book distribution, and there were no businesses. They're just in the Western world, it was very hard, and it was a great struggle for Prabhupada for those years, from 65 through 69. Whatever temples we had were rentals, and they could barely keep up paying the rent. I think I told you, when I left the college and joined the Portland Temple, I gave them enough money to pay for like 3 months' rent. That was like how they paid the rent. Things like that. So, just to give you an idea. In 1968, Srila Prabhupada had gone to Japan, and he made an arrangement with the printing house, Dai Nippon. They had great respect for Srila Prabhupada, even though the movement was just beginning, very few temples, practically no money. They culturally tend to look at things long term. That was their how they do business. They would if they saw that something had a future, even if it would take 10 or 15 years to get to that future, they would be willing to make an investment. And that's what they did when they met Srila Prabhupada. He had no money, and he's telling them, we're going to be printing magazines, and we need a line of credit where you print with no money from us. You ship across the ocean with no money from us, and it's not COD, which means cash on delivery. You just ship, and then we get it, and we'll wait till they finally get distributed, and then you'll get some money to pay for everything that you just advanced. That was the way the line of credit was supposed to work, and they agreed. And then Prabhupada said, now, I'm also going to be writing books. I need a different line of credit, working the same way, for the books that I'm going to send you. The way Prabhupada spoke about in the future we're going to have 100 centers and books will be selling all over the world. Before any of this happened, he was describing this is going to happen. They believed him. So they said, okay, we'll give you that line of credit too. But of course, we didn't have any books to give them. Prabhupada really wanted artwork in his books. So we were forced to do one reprinting of the first canto. Basically, it was just for the temple devotees and selling to bookstores. We hadn't even thought of putting them in libraries yet. We didn't start the library party until 1974. So, back in 1968, we are printing this enormous quantity of 2,000 Back to Godheads a month. And we only had about 8 temples. And Prabhupada's manager of the ISKCON Press, whatever you want to call it, was Brahmananda. So Prabhupada would tell Brahmananda, okay, I want you to send 500 magazines to New York. You send 500 magazines to Los Angeles. You send 250 to San Francisco. And in this way, he distributed the 2,000 magazines. And the plan was, give them out to the temples, let them somehow or other give them out on Sankirtan, collect some donations, and separate some money to pay. Now, what happened was, every penny that was collected on the streets for those magazines was being spent on the rent and on bhoga to make prasadam. And sometimes it was being spent, depending on where the temple was, on heating fuel, if they needed heat. And no money was ever going to Dainapan. And after a while, Dainapan started getting pretty concerned about this. And so by the end of 1968, Prabhupada had to write a letter that was the identical letter that he sent to the temple presidents of all 8 or 10 temples. And said, here's the new plan. Brahmananda is going to send you an invoice when the Bhakti Godheads arrive. And I don't care if you have to go out and get a karmi job. But you're going to pay that invoice, or I can't keep printing this magazine every month. And so that's what happened. I'm not sure what job Hansa Dutta got in Montreal. I know that Satsarup, he got a job in Boston. He was a social worker. We all know Jayananda got a job in San Francisco. Taxi driver. I mean, the devotees were going out and getting jobs because Prabhupada ordered them to pay for the Bhakti Godhead. And even then, it was a big struggle. And by the end of 1969, we had a pretty big debt with Dainapan. Okay, so that gives you an idea of the years of struggle that Prabhupada went through. So he stops translating the third canto, and here he feels this. Nirvisesha Shunyavadi, this cloud, this void cloud that covers the world because no one knows who God is. No one in any religion seems to know who God is. So it was as if he was hearing the soul crying out, feeling lost in this dark universe that made Prabhupada stop writing the Srimad Bhagavatam and present a summary study of the 10th canto in the Krishna books. Monumental decision. So at the beginning of 1969, Prabhupada sends a letter to Jadarani. These are the paintings I want you to paint. There were no tapes yet. He hadn't started writing, but he was already planning the first artwork that would ever appear in one of his books. And he gave her a list of 6 paintings. And a few weeks later, he sent the next letter with the next list of 5 paintings. And then what happened is Jadarani got very, very, very sick. We didn't know what the reason was, whether it was the oil painting or the winter, whatever it was, she was so sick, she couldn't do anything. She couldn't paint. All painting stopped. In fact, Prabhupada ordered her to go to Hawaii to recover. She did not recover until the summer of 69. Now, there's one more part to this story I should tell you, which is that Prabhupada had this plan, even though he had gone to Japan to set up this line of credit with this printer, he also had this plan from his own Guru Maharaj, we should have our own printing press. We should have our own press. And he started telling devotees, I want to establish in one central place my ISKCON press. We will have all the equipment, we will have all the devotees, but I will not put this investment into a building that is a rental. It has to be a building that we own. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to all 8 or 10 temples and said, this is my plan. We're going to have a centralized ISKCON press, and amongst you big leaders, whoever can be the first to buy a building, that's where we will put our ISKCON press. And I will go there. I will stay there and write my books from there. And so this is the first transcendental competition in the history of our movement. Who can buy the first temple? And Tamal was in L.A., and Jayananda is in San Francisco, and Gorsundar is in Hawaii, and Brahmananda is in New York, and someone else was in the southern states, and Hansaduda was in Montreal, and everyone is, and Kirtananda and Hayagriva are in West Virginia, and everyone's trying to buy a building and win the competition. This is going to, and have ISKCON Press. This competition lasted for 1 year. And to buy a building in those years, you probably needed between $5,000 to $10,000 U.S. as a down payment. And then the rest would be a loan from a bank, a mortgage, they call it. But our movement had never seen that much money. I mean, we were having trouble paying for 2,000 magazines a month that cost 10 cents a magazine. Anyway, to make a very long story short, and you'll find this very interesting, Boston won this competition. And at the end of the summer of 1969, they bought the very first temple in our movement. And Satsarup was there, but the reason they won the competition was because of a brahmachari named Giriraj. His father gave him $5,000 to put down on the purchase of the temple. Giriraj is the hero of this story, just as he's one of the great heroes of your Bombay temple. That same Giriraj. When I reminded him of this so many years later, he could barely even remember. I had to remind him this is what happened. So now we have this building at 38 Beacon Place in Boston. And Prabhupada, by the way, had devotees that he had selected getting karmi jobs at printing presses, at binders, at different places in New York to learn how to run all the equipment that you need to publish a book, to print a book. Before the this is how Prabhupada would always plan things out, well in advance. I mean, for the whole spring and summer of 1969, there were about 5 or 6 devotees that had these jobs. They were like apprentices in these printing operations. in New York, they'd spend a month at this place, then a month at that place, and they'd go around learning the trade. We had no equipment. They had no idea where they were going to be based, but Prabhupada had them training. So he sent them all up to Boston. It's a long story how we got the money for the equipment, but that's not part of this tale. And he sent the artists up there. So now it's the October of 1969, and now the tapes are coming out, one after another. And Srila Prabhupada is telling the artists, I want to have the book ready by the end of the year. And I want, well, let's see, there's volume one and volume two, combined together, maybe between 85 and 90 paintings. Now, no one had ever done a painting for a book before. They had done some little sketches and drawings for Back to Godhead magazine. And they had done some paintings for the temples. They had done the Acharya paintings. They did the Panchatattva painting. They even did the Radha and Krishna and the eight gopi paintings. And that was our art department, and they were turning out the same paintings over and over again, and they were being shipped to the different temples in the world. So everything had to stop to do the paintings for the Krishna book. And when the artists understood what the Krishna book was supposed to be, they felt very... they felt very inadequate. They felt great anxiety. Prabhupada, your vision of God as the unlimited youthful beauty of God, we don't have the skill to paint that. You are talking about something that goes beyond what the great masters of the European Renaissance produced. If you want to show that level of beauty, and we don't have, we're doing little cartoons, we're childlike artists, we don't have the training. So the artists, there were four artists: Jadarani, Bhardwaj, who had been sent with his wife from Montreal, Muralidhar, who was still Bhaktamark, who had been sent from L.A., and this very nice lady, who to us was like the age of our mother, Devahuti. Prabhupada sent her from L.A. So those were the four artists. So they were meeting amongst themselves. They said, they wrote to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, in order for us to do this, we really need to go to school. We need to go to one of these great... we need to go to Italy, and we will study the Renaissance style, classical art, and we will learn to paint the way the great masters of the Western world have painted, because you want, Prabhupada had selected that as the style. He did not want what was very traditional in poster art of India, which was flat and two-dimensional. He wanted three-dimensional classical realism. He wanted the painting that if you saw it, you would immediately believe it, that it's real, not something imagined by an artist. So they had proposed to Prabhupada, let us go to art school. And maybe after a year or two, we'll have maybe enough training that we could even attempt this. So Prabhupada wrote back, he had considered this idea and said, no, that's not how you're going to learn how to paint. I have a different way for you to learn. What is that? You are going to sit in front of your canvas. They didn't have money to buy canvases. I don't know how they came up with the money. There were no easels. You know, an artist paints on an easel. These canvases, they would stretch them, beg to get the canvas, and they would be flat on the floor, and they'd be leaning over it, or it'd be propped up on the wall, and they would be painting it, and the propping up on a wall means it's on an angle. Very awkward to paint on an angle, and very awkward to paint when it's flat on the floor and you're looking straight down. So Prabhupada said, you're going to sit in front of your canvas and you're going to practice painting 10 hours a day. Every single day of your life. You're not going to do anything else. You go to the morning program. You can take a break for prasadam, but this is it. This is your only service to me. And the whole time that you are sitting in front of that easel with no training, you're going to be sitting there in great anxiety. You're going to feel that state for like 6 months. Months and months and months. And he wrote them a letter, I want you to do a painting a day. And they're going, what? So they finally figured out, because Prabhupada had organized what was supposed to happen when he dictated the tape. He had set up a whole system, like an assembly line, from the tape to be typed and transcribed, and it to be edited, and the Sanskrit department was just starting. Prajumda, that was his first job as a devotee. And no one knew how to do any of these things. And then, so he had set up this whole production schedule to get it ready that you could take the photographs of the pages that are typeset by hand, typesetting, in order to send the plates to Dai Nippon to print. Prabhupada set up this whole assembly line. How did Prabhupada know anything about how a printing process works? Because Krishna tells Prabhupada whatever he needs to know. Prabhupada is not just perfect and absolute when it comes to spiritual matters. Anything in this universe, if it's for his service, Krishna could tell Prabhupada and he'll know how to do it. He set up this whole process. So the artists were looking at how Prabhupada had set up the production line, and they said, you know what? This is an assembly line. The only way we're going to be able to meet Prabhupada's deadline as artists is to do something that is unthinkable. It's not completely unthinkable. In the time of the great masters, in the Renaissance era, they would have great artists studying under them as apprentices. And the great master would design the composition. And then the apprentices would come and work on the canvas and start filling it in under their direction. And then the great master would come back and finish it with all the detail and the highlights and so on. So they said, you know, we can use that strategy and create our own kind of assembly line amongst the three or four of us. And we'll all work on the same painting. You do this, you do that, you do that. And we'll have this assembly line. And almost every painting in the Krishna book, volume 1 and volume 2, is an assembly line painting. It's not just done by one artist. It's done by three artists. Bhadraj, who was the genius that thought this up, did the composition and design. Jadarani filled in all the colors. And Muralidhar, with his fine touch, did all the details, highlights, and fine details. Devahuti didn't fit into this process very well. And she had her own style of painting. So there's about 10 or 12 Devahuti paintings in the Krishna book that are very, very unique to her. The Rasleela dance, Krishna with the lady giving him the garland, the wives of the Brahmin. Devahuti, you could always tell her paintings. They sparkled. They had a very unique style to them. All the rest of the paintings were done in this way. This amazing way of painting without any training, except the mystical potency of being empowered by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord to learn how to do your service. This is a true story. Now, the one other thing you should know about this marathon. The winter of 1969-1970 in Boston was the coldest winter in recorded weather history of 100 years in the city of Boston. Up to that year, that was their coldest winter. And this temple could not afford heat. And the artists were working in the attic, the top level of the building. They're wearing winter clothing, winter gloves, leaning on top of a painting that's flat on the floor or leaning on a wall, trying to paint masterpieces in thick mittens. These were the conditions that they worked in to make it even more intense, to put them in even more anxiety, to make them feel this is impossible even more, to make them feel a level of desperation that I don't think to this day anyone in our movement has ever felt. So desperate. And yet you had to produce. And yet you were so desperate. And that's how Prabhupada trained his artists. And when they finished the Krishna book marathon, they then had to start the Bhagavad Gita marathon. Another 67 paintings. And when they finished that, they had to do the new paintings for the first canto. 7 paintings a book times 3 volumes. The second canto, 7 paintings a book times 2 volumes. The Nectar of Devotion, right after Krishna book, Prabhupada came out with Nectar of Devotion. 7 paintings. When you add up all these paintings, and they all have to be finished by the end of 72, because not even the end of 72. The Bhagavad Gita, as it is, was published in 72. So, the end of 69, so all of 70, and all of 71, maybe 2.5 years of non-stop marathon painting. Mm-hmm. 87 paintings in the Krishna book. 60, maybe 67 paintings in the Bhagavad Gita. 21 paintings in the first canto. 14 paintings in the second canto. 7 paintings in Nectar of Devotion. And then they started the third canto, 7 paintings for each volume. There's 3 volumes. So we are talking about 87, 140, 150, 160, and 70, 189. We're talking about over 200 pieces of art in a 2-year period by this small group of artists chanting in utter desperation to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. And thus the very first marathon in the history of our movement began and lasted for 2 years. And nobody knows this story. And all these years I was thinking, oh, I invented the marathon. Book distribution. That was not invented by me, and that was not the first marathon. And that's the miracle of how these books came out. You know, one last part of the story. There's so many parts, but so it's 1970. The first volume is ready. Prabhupada sends it all to Dainapan. Somehow it's all ready. And Dainapan says to Prabhupada, You know, you owe us a lot of money on this line of credit for your magazines. And Prabhupada said, yeah, but this is a totally different thing. This is a book. We have a totally separate line of credit that we've never used yet. So we don't owe you anything on that. So Dhinavan said, yeah, okay, you don't owe us anything yet on that. But if the experience is going to be the same, they were really hesitant. So then Prabhupada told them, this is all through letters, Prabhupada told them, okay, or maybe he went there in 69 or 60, he sent Karandar, that's what he did, he sent Karandar to tell them, okay, the first time, one time only, I'll pay for the whole printing up front. And after that, you let us use this credit line. For that, Dhinavan said, okay, we can't say no to you. That sounds pretty fair. You still owe us all this money for the magazine? Okay. So when Dhinavan agreed, Prabhupada immediately contacted Shyamasundar in London. And he told Shyamasundar, I need $18,000 right now. Right now, you leave the Birdplace Temple and you go drive to George's house. And you ask George Harrison, you tell him we need this money. And Shyamasundar said, Prabhupada, we have never asked him for money. That's going to make him feel that we're just like everybody else. Up to this point, he loves us because we never asked him for anything. Whatever he's done, it's by his desire. He volunteered to produce the album and this and that. Prabhupada just said, no, just ask him. It will work out. So Shyamasundar goes to George's house. I don't know if you know this story. Anyway, when he asked George, there was the most awkward silence. And everything Shyamasundar was fearing, the whole relationship was going to collapse right then and there. That George was just going to see us like everybody else looking for money and this and that. He tried his best to explain what the Krishna book was, how unique it was, and how the printer won't print it if we don't give him this money first. And right at the middle of that moment, there was a sudden, and if you know this story from Shyamasundar, there was a sudden power outage. And all the power in George's house went out. Just as George was about to answer and probably say no. And I don't know, it lasted maybe 5 minutes or whatever. Whatever it lasted. And suddenly the power came back on. And in that moment, when George couldn't even see Shyamasundar and he was just pausing and reflecting on, Prabhupada is asking. This is not Shyamasundar. This is Prabhupada. He started thinking this whole thing out. This is for God. This is for Krishna. The world doesn't know this. Who is Krishna? I could be helping the world to find out who God is. When the lights came on, he was in bliss. He was smiling and said, okay, where do I send the money? And that's how the Krishna book came into the world. So, after the Krishna book and the nectar devotion, Prabhupada went back and finished the third canto. Then Prabhupada finished the entire fourth canto in 73. And then, for the second time only, he stopped writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. We were so far behind in publishing, we had just done the second canto, we had finished the fourth canto. And he started writing the 17-book volume of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And by the end of 1974, Prabhupada had finished all 17 volumes. And at the beginning of 75, he went back to the Bhagavatam and gave us the most complicated of all the cantos, the fifth canto. So by the end of 1974, Prabhupada knew something was really, really wrong at ISKCON Press. I mean, we were coming out with three books a year. One book every 4 months. Maybe if we really pushed it, one book every 3 months, but more or less it was taking between 3 and 4 months for each book to come out. So say 4 months. So by the time we're starting 1975, and Prabhupada is so mad, they're just finishing the fourth canto. Meanwhile, there's the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita and the fifth canto. So, between January and April, somehow or other, they had started painting the Chaitanya Charitamrita in December of 74. So, somehow or other, they got 2 volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita ready between the end of 74 and April of 75. So that is 5 months. That was like the world's record for them, 2 volumes. So Srila Prabhupada and I were discussing this problem. And at the end of 74, he asked me to see if I could help do something with the production. And the reason he asked me is because the other trustee, remember the first one was Karandar, the second one was Bali Mardan, he was having his own issues, and at the end of 74 he had to step down. So now there were no BBT trustees. There was just Radha Balabhar, a press manager. So Prabhupada asked me, you have to now be in, you're going to have to do both jobs, the publishing and the production. And I said, Prabhupada, I can't do that from L.A. If you really want this to be done efficiently, we have to have it all in the one roof. Whether it's New York or L.A., but it has to be in one place. And we didn't really own the building in New York, and there were lots of problems with the Tiffany Place building in New York, because it was in an industrial neighborhood and it was a very heavily ethnic neighborhood where they did not like the Hare Krishna devotees, because no aspersion. We love people from Italy. This was a very heavily Italian neighborhood. They were very concerned that their sons and daughters were coming over to our temple, being lured by free prasadam and Sunday feasts, and they were getting indoctrinated in our Vedic philosophy. And so, you know, the stereotypes of the Italian mafia and gangs and everything in America, it's not completely Hollywood. There's some truth to it. And there were attacks on the devotees. Devotees were getting beaten up. There were attacks on the press. It wasn't safe. So with all of that happening and Bali Mardan leaving, Prabhupada said, okay, we're going to move everything to L.A. You and I are going to fly together and explain it to the press devotees. And I got to fly for the first time with Prabhupada. And we told 30, 40 devotees, Prabhupada wants you to move to L.A. You're all New York devotees. You have your families here. This is your life. You're going to be uprooted. You're all coming to L.A. And they all agreed. So So Prabhupada said, we will now present it to the GBC at our Mayapur meeting in February of 1975. And if the GBC agrees, how are they not going to agree? It's Prabhupada telling them, this is the plan, what do you think? Oh yes, Prabhupada, of course, whatever you say. So at the Mayapur festival in 75, the GBC agreed, and Prabhupada named me made me the trustee. And then sent me back to America. So in March, I had to buy another building and rent another building. And in April, I had to fix it all up, knock down walls, set up all the office space for the production, the photography, the art studios, all of this stuff. And at the end of April, we started packing up ISKCON Press, and everybody flew out, and it was shipped all to L.A. They arrived in May, end of April and May, and we set the whole thing up. By the end of May, we were all unpacked, new offices, housing, everything was ready. And I get a letter from Srila Prabhupada. He's in Australia, on his way to Hawaii. Now that the press has moved, he said, I'm very unhappy about these 17 books not being printed. And this one book every 4 months means it's going to take 4 years to come out with these books. So I want to hear your plan. So I discussed it with the press devotees. We convinced Hayagriva to give up New Vrindavan and come out to L.A. Now we had two great editors, Jayadweta and Hayagriva. And we came up with this idea that if we work a day shift and a night shift, including with the artists, we could do one book a month. I was so proud. We're going to tell Prabhupada, we have increased from one book every 4 months to one book in 1 month. This is like 400% better or something, whatever the percentage is. So now it's the middle of June, Prabhupada's in Hawaii, and I get the next letter. He is very angry at you. Now, I have had Prabhupada angry at me before, so okay, what did I do? There's 17 books, you haven't printed them. And I'm thinking, oh God, the press just got here, what do you mean? How is it my fault? I was thinking in my false ego way. And I was tipped off by Prabhupada's traveling secretary. You better be ready, because Prabhupada's having me call up all the GBC and sannyasis in North America. He's telling all of them to fly to L.A. to meet him for a very urgent meeting in L.A. He wants all the GBC and sannyasis of North America right there when he confronts you. So that was the message I got. And sure enough, Brahmananda, Vishnu John, Tamal, Kirtananda, Satru, Haridayananda, you name it. They all flew into L.A. Prabhupada arrives, gives this amazing arrival address where he describes how his spiritual master said, it's more important to print books than that. You can sell the marble. Just get the money and print the books. And then that day, we gave him a tour of the new BBT. He loved everything. That was his arrival day. And the very next morning, on the morning walk in Venice Beach, we're all walking. Prabhupada has me, I don't have a dunda, these big devotees are all around Prabhupada. And he calls me up in the middle of the night. So what is the plan? And I started explaining to Prabhupada that we have this great plan. We're going from one book in 4 months down to one book in 1 month. I mean, just asking Prabhupada the questions for the art paintings, that used to take 2-3 weeks, back and forth letters, just to get the questions answered so the artist could make an authentic painting. Remember, you can't put anything in Prabhupada's books unless it's authentic. But we had it all figured out. So Prabhupada, and one book a month. That sounds like it will take you 17 months just to print what I have already written. And meanwhile, I'm still writing. But this is not a good plan. Nope, not a good plan. I said, Prabhupada, okay, I just blurted out. We'll set up a second assembly. We'll double the assembly line that we already had in mind. Instead of just day and night, we'll have 2 assembly lines day and night. I can give you 2 books in 1 month. So I threw out that number 2 into the ether. 2 books, 1 month. So Prabhupada thought about it. I said, no. My idea is, I want all 17 books in 2 months. Not 2 books in 1 month. All 17 in 2 months. I was really startled when Prabhupada said that, because I knew it was impossible. So I just said, Prabhupada, that's I just blurted it out. Prabhupada, that is impossible. I mean, I'm thinking, 8 books, 9 books a month. I mean, there's no way we could do that. Editing, typeset, I mean, every phase of the production takes time, and the art takes the most time. It would take 2-3 months of painting. So I said, Prabhupada, that's impossible. Now, there was Prabhupada, who stopped walking, planted his cane very firmly in the sand in Venice Beach, and stared at me. And I'm facing him. Around Prabhupada, in this great semicircle, are all the leaders of our movement. And they're behind Prabhupada, and he brought them there just for that effect. And he looks at me, looks right through me, and says, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. This was much heavier than when he was yelling at me about the Krishna book. This is like, okay, that I could easily handle. Just don't put in the artwork they want. Very fine. I'll just keep it the way it is. That was easy. That was nothing. This is impossible. And he's telling me, if you believe that something is impossible, you are an idiot. And I looked up at Prabhupada, and behind him, I'm looking at all of these faces, Brahmana, Tamal, all these faces, and they're all looking at me like, yeah, what are you going to do now? And at least one or two of them were thinking, boy, am I glad I am not you. You know, you could read their faces. It was very clear. Nobody wanted to be me. Nobody wanted that job. And so Prabhupada was staring at me for like a minute, 30 seconds, to really get it to sink in that he was serious. And then he turned around and just started continuing on his morning walk. And I'm just standing there. Like, this is the challenge of faith. Can I defy everything that I know, everything that I think, everything that is, to me, logical and understandable, and accept something that is inconceivable? Can I do I have enough faith to even entertain this idea? And somehow or other, I believed that whatever Prabhupada said, he is the word of God coming through him. And the second I thought that way, the second I accepted and remembered that that's my relationship with Prabhupada, that's why I joined this movement, that's why I surrendered to him, the second I thought that, something amazing started happening. And this has, I swear, not me, but flying into my head were instructions that I had no experience and background and education and intelligence to think up on my own. And the first thing that flew into my head was an image of the whole universe and the description of the planets and how they're floating. They're so heavy and they're floating. Magic. In a perfect position for them to have whatever life on those planets exists, to have food grow on those planets, to have an environment that supports the life forms on that planet. I just started having this vision of what the heck is impossible? Look at this whole universe. How can anything be impossible for God? Nothing is impossible. His energies do things that we can't even imagine. And so instantaneously I'm having all these visions of the of like the Vedic conclusion, Vedic knowledge. It's not something that happens all the time. I live like that, I'm getting Vedic knowledge. It's not like that. But at that moment in my life, because Prabhupada wanted it, it was happening. And this knowledge was just pouring into my dull brain. And Radhavallabha was, I don't know, he was ready to bloop. Like, oh my God. Like, every now and then we had these thoughts, is suicide our only option? We were thinking. So, I pull them, they're all walking, and I say, come here, we can do this. I'm telling you, we can do this. I know we can do this. And I just got so excited and was telling him a few things that I was thinking. And it just immediately, because he surrendered to Prabhupada also, immediately he started seeing it. I said, yeah, we can do it. And we just ran back up to the morning walk. And Prabhupada sensed us coming with eyes behind his head. He stopped walking, turned around and said, so, what have you decided? And we said, Prabhupada, we can do this. We have three conditions. You don't talk like this to your guru, but I said, Prabhupada, we have three conditions. Okay, let's hear them. I said, the first condition is I need more manpower. I want your permission to write a letter to every temple in the world, anyone who has any skill in typing and photography, in any of the trades that we need, I want them to send them to L.A. for 2 months as a loan. We'll send them back when they're done. Okay, granted. Send off the letter. Tell them it's my order. Okay. Second condition. Prabhupada, up until this point, since 1970, we've created a Sanskrit department. They've gotten pretty good. They can do the transliterations, the texts, they understand. They can edit without screwing it up. Chaitanya Charitamrita is in Bengali. None of them have ever worked in Bengali. The script, the meaning, the subtle nuance of the words, and they have to edit. They can't screw this up. Second condition, we need you to spend some extra time in L.A. and let our Sanskrit department become a Sanskrit Bengali department, and you will train them. And Prabhupada thought that was reasonable also. And he said, okay. And what's your third condition? I said, Prabhupada, my third condition is, it deals with the artists. I lose a month writing you a letter, waiting for your reply. If there's more follow-up, writing you a second letter with questions for this art. If we don't get the answers to these questions, we can't do the art. There won't be artwork. We don't know what Lord Chaitanya's dhoti looks like. We don't know what Lord Nityananda, the color of his dhoti, should be. We don't know how the seekers should look. We don't know when someone should have a shaved head, someone should have a mustache, and someone should have a beard. We don't know anything. We have a lot of questions. So I need to be able to go into your room the second I have these questions and ask them. And if you're not in L.A., I can't use the mail. You have to let me use the phone. Prabhupada hated this. Thought it was such a waste of money. I said, Prabhupada, you have to let me use the phone. I will call your secretary, whatever country you're in. I will give him the questions. He has to drop everything, call me back in 1 hour with the answers. I'm asking Prabhupada, you have 1 hour to answer my questions. I was like so nervous, but this was the condition I had thought of to make this work. Now the thing about Prabhupada that's not as well known as it should be. No one asked Prabhupada more questions about anything than the art department. I mean, Prabhupada would always get letters from devotees, philosophical questions, management questions, but no one actually wrote more letters with more questions in all the history of our movement than the artists. And the thing about Prabhupada is that whenever we asked a question, he did not have to do research. He didn't have to look it up. He did not have to consult. Prabhupada would look within and just immediately give us the answer. And to understand how amazing this is, we're asking him about what demigods look like, what their cities look like, what their buildings look like, what their dress looks like. We're asking Prabhupada questions about all kinds of things in the spiritual world and on other planets all over the universe, and he knows the answer instantly to everything we ever asked. Without research, anybody else would have said, I'll get back to you in a month, I'll look it up. We were asking some very difficult questions. What does the god of the oceans look like? What does Varuna look like? Is he watery? What do ghosts look like? How do we paint? There's a painting where Lord Nityananda is having a festival. Now, Lord Nityananda sees Lord Chaitanya there, but no one else sees Lord Chaitanya there. Are we supposed to paint Lord Chaitanya like a ghost? Like you can see through? We had no idea how to do these paintings. We had a million questions, and he answered them. When he said, okay, within an hour you'll have the answer, on a phone call, and instantly if I'm here, you walk in the room. There was never a time when Prabhupada was asked a question he did not know the answer. on any topic in the material world or in the spiritual world. That's why there's nobody like Srila Prabhupada. Ever. Like this. There's nobody that could do that. That's why he's the acharya for these books for thousands of years. And he came up with this idea to add artwork to the books of the highest philosophy. Do you know what the history of selling book philosophy books was in the world before Prabhupada? If they print 5,000, that was like amazing. Philosophy books are not bestsellers in the world of publishing. You don't go to a printer and say, I'm going to print 1.5 million copies of this book, and it's a book about philosophy. That doesn't happen. But that was Prabhupada's genius. The combining of the artwork into his books made it possible for this philosophy to be consumed all over the world and to attract people to wanting to read the books. That was the purpose of the art. So the art was... Prabhupada said, ISKCON Press is the heart of this movement, and the art department is the heart of ISKCON Press. So, with those conditions, we said, thank you, Prabhupada. Radhavallabh and I left the morning walk. We ran to a car. We drove 20 minutes back to the temple. We had a meeting with the press. They had just unpacked a few weeks before. They were just getting settled. We had just convinced them about one book a month. Now we're going to have a meeting about 17 books in 2 months. And when we started explaining how we were going to do it, the same energy that we were feeling, they started feeling it. And everyone said, okay, somehow or other, this is going to be mystic experience, miracle experience, and it's going to happen. These devotees, for these 2 months, did not leave their office or their studios. They would collapse there. If they had to, they left to use the bathroom. We had the LA temple practically shut down in order to cook for them, clean for them, wash them, do their laundry. The LA temple was completely dovetailed into this two-month marathon. So that way, whatever normal mundane duties you have to do in order to take care of your life, we're going to take care of for you. So there was a lot of parts to this marathon that had to all fit. We wanted historical accuracy. So when the marathon first started, I think I took 2 days to start reading through all the books, the manuscripts. And I was looking for places that existed, because it's only 500 years ago, and I made a list. And I called in this devotee, Bhargava. Some of you may know him, I don't know. He was our photographer. And I said, I am sending you to India. I'm giving you a list in Bengal, in Orissa, in South India, wherever Lord Chaitanya traveled, you are going there, and you are doing the whole tour in 3 weeks. You are taking photographs, you are sending them back to us. I have to print these photographs in the books to make them authentic, to show historically this is where Lord Chaitanya was. Here's a round trip ticket, and here's a little money, and get out of here. Within 2 days, he was on an airplane going to India. Then we had to call up the printer and say, listen, we know that you have all kinds of obligations to publishing companies that have scheduled to print their books with you. We're just starting with you. Last year we had just started with you. We're going to give you 17 different books in 2 months. That have to be, they all have to be printed. And that means each press, you have to set it up for each different book. I'm going to need all your presses. I'm going to need you to bump every book from the world's most famous authors that you print, because this was the biggest printer in America. Every publishing company sent their books there. And I asked them, can you please bump all of these best-selling authors so that I can print these 17 books on your equipment? Because I have to have complete access to all your equipment. And they said yes. I don't know how that happened, but they agreed. I said, we're printing 300,000 volumes, but it's 17 different titles. Every one needs a different setup. There's different artwork, there's different color, there's different cover jackets. I mean, it's all different. And anyway, so all these different things had to fall into place. And organizing all these different things was way beyond our skill set. All I can tell you is that when you get an impossible order, if you surrender in that way, Krishna supplies the intelligence how to carry it out from within the heart. Krishna, it was his marathon. And he was using all of us, and he just flooded us with all the whatever we needed. There was this one devotee that came up to me about the second week of the marathon and said, I just met an artist at the beach. We were doing Harinam, and I brought him back. I want you to meet him. And I was I had no time. You know, I was not sleeping. But I said, all right, if it's an artist, I'll meet him. I didn't even believe it was real. And this man, about 45-year-old, with a heavy limp, had just come up from South America somewhere. His name was Bhakta Hector. He later became initiated. Hector was one of these artists that on TV they can do a painting in an hour of a landscape. Hector was one of those artistic savants, geniuses. He could take... It was like a knife. It's called a palette knife. And he would spread the color, and he could make a forest. He could make grass. He could make any... he couldn't do figures. He could just do backgrounds. And all of a sudden, he's interested in our philosophy, and Krishna just sent this guy walking on the beach like he had just descended into the earth planet. The devotees grabbed him, brought him to me. We threw him up into the art department. Every background in every painting of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that has any landscape, that is Hector. And every painting, we started the assembly line again with the artists. And they were so mad because even though we had planned it, an artist would work and work and work and finally collapse at his easel 2 a.m. and then I would be sneaking in, taking the canvas off their easel, because if there was still one artist still awake, bring it to that artist, have them paint on it, then when that artist fell asleep, bring it back to the first artist. And I don't know what I was thinking, like they weren't going to notice. About the fourth week into the marathon, the first 5 books were ready. So Radha Balva and I rush him to the airport. We ship him to Kingsport Press. Kingsport Press, when they set everything up, we fly Radha Balva out. And in one day, he has to approve all the color before they can be allowed to print. We have to make sure that the color is just balanced perfectly. So, it was the fifth week of this week marathon when the first five books came back from Kingsport Press. They arrived at 2 in the morning at the L.A. airport. Radha Balabhar and I, because it didn't matter, we weren't asleep. So we go to the airport, we wait an hour, we get the books. We get back to the temple, it's 4 a.m. They're just waking up the deities, getting them ready for Mangal Aarti. We go on to the altar. And the deities forgave us that we weren't clean. And we put on each altar the first five books of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila and Anjalila. 3 Majalilas, 2 Anjalilas. At 4:30, when the doors opened up, you know, we had about 200, 300 devotees living at the temple at the time. The doors opened, no one knew this was, and the doors open up. And there are the books on the altar that had just come out. The first five of these 17 books. That was the most intense kirtan any devotee had ever been in their life. That Mangal Aarti kirtan, seeing the fruit of Prabhupada's order, knowing the story of everyone in the movement knew that story about impossible is a word in a fool's diction, and here they are. I can still feel that kirtan to this day. That kirtan lifted everybody. Your feet weren't touching the ground. It went on for an hour. We couldn't stop chanting. We were in such bliss. It was just, We were seeing a miracle. We were seeing the reality that absolutely nothing is impossible. We could do anything. We could change the world. Nothing is impossible. That was the message that went out all over ISKCON. There is no such thing as impossible. That's what Prabhupada gave us in that marathon. That faith to surrender and be the instruments to proving that and to seeing that and making that part of your Krishna conscious life. So, with your permission, we'll stop here. And on my next visit, I can share some more Prabhupada stories. Thank you very much. That is it. We could have a few more minutes. He wanted, I'm sorry. This is a challenge for our movement, because to print a book with 80 paintings or 60 paintings is more expensive today, even relatively speaking. We could sell that unabridged Bhagavad Gita back then for $5 and pay $2 for it. But today, if that Bhagavad Gita is printed with 67 plates, color plates, I don't know what it would cost. I just know that Prabhupada never authorized us to remove something once it had been approved. So that's the challenge for the BBT of the world, is how to find the way, whether it's by quantity printing or but there is a way to print Prabhupada's books without removing what he put into them. And more than any other book, the Krishna book and the Bhagavad Gita, those paintings were designed by Srila Prabhupada. When devotees would ask Prabhupada questions, how do you want us to show the soul? How do you want us to show a Vaikuntha airplane? How do you want us to show this? How do you want to show that? Prabhupada either gave him the idea in words describing how to design the painting, or Prabhupada liked to do personally little sketches. He would sketch an airplane and send it to them and say, this is what it should look like. The soul passing through the body, he described how it should look, how they should paint it, and then he did a little sketch. When you have Srila Prabhupada personally designing the art for his book, even more than anything else, how can you remove it? He designed the painting. He planned it and designed it and instructed the artist how to do it. This is a great challenge for the BBT. They'll have to figure this out. They can have an abridged version which doesn't have all the art, as long as they keep one version which does. That they'll have to do. There's some answers. Today, our BBT trustees, a different generation, they never had the experience of Prabhupada yelling in their face, pounding his fists on his head, get out. They didn't have that experience, so they need to hear that. And for too long, I have not shared these stories. So I blame myself, in part, that wasn't widely known. I failed to share what I had been trained in properly. I think it's my fault. That's what I believe. And maybe I can do something about it. I will try. Thank you.